The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week, as every week, we are giving you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. And golly, what announcements could I possibly make? I can't think of one single solitary thing that is coming up in the next couple of weeks. Oh, except for the National Real Estate Investing Summit. You guys are really going to miss out if you did not get yourself a ticket. And I know at this point it's a little late for people to have travel plans, but if you wanted to get a virtual ticket where you could watch from the comfort of your own couch on Zoom all day, but then also get all of the recordings of all of the main sessions. And I keep having to say this, asterisk, except Bill Knoll, who doesn't want us recording him because he's giving out tax tips that I guess he doesn't want on record for some reason. You can still get one of those at wmkvfm.org. Just scroll to the bottom of the page. It'll be $297, and it will be a virtual ticket. There are no more in-person tickets available at that site. But, yeah, you can get a virtual ticket, which will get you at least the information. It won't get you all the networking, but it'll get you all the information. Other thing is, tonight is the Summit Investors Help Night. The National Real Estate Summit started, it's been going on 2 years now, having monthly meetings because the folks who come just, they all love each other and they can't, like, stop talking to each other for a year. So once a month we do a free help night. It is on Zoom. So yes, you can attend. Tonight's topic is help for private lenders and financial partners. We did one, 4 or 5 months ago that was help for people who might be in a deal that they were having trouble making payments on. And this is the other way around. If you were a financial partner or a lender in a deal and you are not getting payments, or maybe the time has expired, you haven't, whatever, you know, if you need some help or you're just worried about, like, I don't want to get into a deal because I'm not sure how to keep that from happening or do what to do about it, you can listen in. How are you going to get a seat? That's a very interesting question. I hadn't thought about that until just this moment. Go to CincinnatiRIA.com. It's on the calendar today. Just click and register, and it will send you a Zoom link from there. So my guest today is Melissa Yatsik, who is she's a little bit of a phenom, actually. She has collected up 19 midterm rentals in 2 years, which, I mean, those of you who, like, it took you 19 years to collect 19 units, you understand that that is a very quick pace. And no, she did not inherit $1 million or win the lottery. She's got an awful lot of those by simply master leasing them, and in other cases has bought them with creative financing. So I'm guessing you are going to have a lot of questions about how she has done what she has done. So let's just give out the phone numbers and email address now. 877-772-9658 is where you call with questions and anything about midterm rentals, master leases, how she's done it, why she's done it. Those are all fair questions. 877-772-9658, or send an email to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome, Melissa. It's so weird not to be saying, and she's joining us from her home in Kettering, Ohio. I like to have somebody sitting here in the studio with me is
Yes, hello. I'm really excited to be here on the radio.
Yeah, it'll be easy, trust me.
Yeah, the last time I was on the radio, I was in high school and I was playing the trumpet as part of a band showcase. So.
Ah, okay. Well, this will be at least as good as that, I'm sure. So, can we start out just by talking about what led you to this strategy? Because you're not a full-time real estate investor. In fact, you're practically a full-time mom. You've got four kids at home.
That's right.
You got a job and then...
And we homeschool.
And you homeschool. Okay, so you've got two jobs.
And I have a house that I'm supposed to keep in order. And I'm supposed to be healthy and take care of my body and exercise and stuff.
Yes. And despite all of this, you have managed to do as much as you have done. But the question is, like, why this? Why not wholesaling or retailing or traditional rentals? Like, what attracted you to this particular strategy?
So that's a great question. I actually have a little bit of experience with some of those other things. I got started in real estate. My first deal was a wholesale deal. And I also did some flipping and some other things with notes. And then just some things happened in life where I took a break from all things real estate for a while. And then when I was coming back into it, I knew that it was going to be important for me to pick one thing and focus on one thing because, you know, I knew that was important. So I looked at all the things I had learned about and I did pick midterm rentals and master leasing very specifically as my one thing. And I think that's one of the reasons I was able to do so much so quickly is because I was really focused in on I'm only doing this right now.
Mm-hmm. What was it about? Let's start with the exit strategy because you always pick your exit strategy first or else you don't know, like, what kind of deal am I even looking for? What am I supposed to be paying? I don't know because I don't know what the exit strategy is. What was it about midterm rentals as opposed to short-term or long-term rentals that made you decide, yep, this is going to be my focus?
Right. So for me, midterm rentals are a happy medium. So for those who don't know, a midterm rental typically has a lease that is 1 month or more. Your long-term rentals are traditionally like the one-year lease that most people sign when they move into an apartment. And short-term rentals is the vacation rentals where you're staying for a weekend or maybe a week, a few days. So the midterm rentals are right in the middle. It's 1 month or more. Typically, the people who we host stay for a few months. And you know, what attracted me to that is I had some experience with short-term rentals and you have to clean a lot less when people stay for a few months. And so, the turnovers are less frequent. So each place you only turn over maybe a few times a year. So there's a lot less work. It's still not quite as, you know, passive as a long-term rental. But it's not as hard as a short-term rental.
Yeah, I was going to say, I never go clean my long-term rentals.
Right.
I mean, like after somebody moves out.
Right.
But that could be 5 years up the road.
Exactly.
If your main concern was cleaning, do long-term rentals.
Yes. But the nice thing about the midterm rentals is the cash flow is greater. And so you make more money in exchange for the extra cleaning or all the extra work that you need to do to turn the units a few times a year. Advice I heard and that I follow is I don't really do a midterm rental unless I can make at least $500 a month in cash flow. And that was honestly one of the reasons that attracted me to that because that's really hard to find in the long-term rental world. While you can find that in the short-term rental world and you can make even more cash flow, it's a lot more work. And in my life, I just did not have the time to do that much work.
Okay. So it was the right balance of good cash flow, but not quite so much effort as the short-term vacation type renters might cause you. Okay.
Right.
Because I know this question is going to come up. Can you compare, like, take any one of your units and say, I'm going to convert it to a regular rental.
Mm-hmm.
How much more cash flow are you making for having furnished it and paying for all the utilities and stuff like that than you would as a long-term rental?
Typically, that's where I go for about $500 a month more.
Okay.
Than you would make as a long-term.
Okay. Which explains why you're able to rent those properties from other people and still make long-term cash flow. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Melissa more about just this whole strategy, everything she's done, trying, of course, to inspire you guys to understand that there are more things to do in the world than wholesale, retail, and rent, and that there are things that can be highly profitable if you will bother to learn how to do them. If you have any questions for Melissa, 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658. Or just send an email. It's vinoradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones-Cox. My guest today is Melissa Jacek, and you will probably be unsurprised to hear that Melissa is one of the 35 expert speakers at the National Real Estate Investing Summit coming up this weekend. I'm sorry, next weekend. Don't push it further. Don't push it closer than it needs to be, Vina. Next weekend here in Cincinnati, you should really get tickets if you want to see like what you're missing if you don't. That's at nationalreisummit.com, nationalreisummit.com. But if you want to get a virtual ticket, go to wmkvfm.org and don't look for a tab that says National Real Estate Summit. This is just a pledge drive item. So scroll to the bottom of the page and you will see it. And that way your entire ticket price actually goes to support public radio here on WMKV. So, Melissa, I understand the desire to do midterm rentals. I'm guessing you probably got some education about that. You didn't just decide, I'm smart as other people. I can figure this all out
for
myself.
Sure. I did not invent midterm rentals or master leasing, but I learned about it going to RIA events and by going to events like the summit. So I definitely think that's where I got it from.
As you actually started getting and opening these midterm rentals, what were some of the challenges that you faced that maybe you weren't fully expecting?
Ooh, good question. So I would say some of the first things that happened is you'd get one launched and you'd put it up, and then all of a sudden you get a booking, and the things that you thought you had so much time to do suddenly have to be done by 3 p.m. tomorrow. And so there's been a lot of days where we're suddenly hustling to do the last minute stuff, but we do a lot of our best work at the last minute.
And these are furnished rentals, right?
Right. They're all furnished.
Okay. And so the question I always ask people who do furnished rentals is, do you furnish them yourself? Do you hire a designer? Do you order stuff off the internet? How do you do that?
So I actually asked a couple of people that offer that service, and the prices I was quoted were so high. I was like, there is no way I could definitely do that for cheaper. So that's what we did. We did it for cheaper. So we do it ourselves. We do order some things online from the online stores. We go buy some things from local stores that you can drive to. And then we do a lot of, buying things at rummage sales or secondhand, buying some used furniture pieces as well. So we kind of cobble it together.
Who is your typical person who only needs to live in a house for 2 or 3 months?
So there's actually 4 groups of people that need this type of housing. So the first group, and probably the most common, is traveling workers. And whenever I say that, people always say, oh, you mean like travel nurses. And that is, for some reason, the one everybody knows about. But that's just a small fraction of the traveling workers that we host. We get so many types of traveling workers in all industries and all types of work. And so that's been kind of eye-opening to me as well, the wide variety of traveling workers that we have and that we host. So traveling workers is number one. The second probably most common group is people who are relocating. So if you've ever bought and sold a house, you know that the stars don't always align on your closing dates and you become, quote, homeless for a little while. Or maybe you're moving to a new area and you're not quite sure which school district or which subdivision or which part of town you want to live in. And you don't really want to buy the house, you know, remotely. You want to come and live for a while, but you don't really want to sign a 1-year lease either. And you don't really love the idea of living in a hotel. And so that's where we can let people rent for a little while they figure out, while that happens, or sometimes while they're building a house. So that's the second group. The third one is, insurance claims, people who have a fire or flood or some kind of damage to their home, and the insurance company will pay for them to be temporarily housed somewhere while their house is being repaired. Mm-hmm. And the fourth group is the smallest one, but that's people going through some kind of life transition, some type of breakup or a divorce or even a death where they've sold or moved or a job transition as well, a sudden loss of job or trying to figure out basically they're moving out of their house or selling their house. They're not quite sure what their next steps are. They don't want to commit to 1 year lease. They're not ready to buy a new house, but they need some time to figure out their next steps. And so we've been able to provide housing for those people as mm-hmm. well.
And there's enough of all of those kinds of people to keep 19 units. And in what, I mean, it's not like it's, you're not in New York City. You're in a fairly small little, you know, not exactly rural, small town kind of.
Right. It's Dayton, Ohio.
Situation. So you're able to keep them full?
Yeah, for the most part. We do see some seasonality. And that's where when I run my numbers, I always factor in like a 1 to 2 months of vacancy. Because a lot of the traveling workers, for example, go home for Christmas, all right? Or they'll time their work contracts to end around that time. And so we do see, but the people who, you know, we had a fire and we were housing them, their house didn't magically repair itself for Christmas. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there is a little bit of seasonality to it, but so far, in my 2 years of it's been full in my expert time.
My 2 years worth of experience tells me it's good.
Yes.
Well, no, I mean, you actually got into the business just as the real estate market had topped out and was starting to flatten out and now decline. So, yeah, if it's worked well over this last 2 years, it probably is going to continue to work well. Although I will ask the question, do you have any concern that so people who have Airbnbs have big concerns right now because mm-hmm. folks aren't traveling.
Yeah.
Like I got an email from Las Vegas, the city of Las Vegas, begging me to come and stay in any of their fine hotels.
Wow, they didn't send me an email.
they sent me one. They had like a 5-day special where like every hotel room in the city was big time on sale, like $99 a night. So, I mean, that tells me that people either don't feel like they've got the money to travel or they don't have the, you know, I can't take my vacation this year because I might get fired because people mm-hmm. get fired at my job, whatever. And so people I know a lot of short-term rental owners who are just converting them back to.
Right. Well, and that's very valid. And, you know, the short-term rental, that's another reason why I did not choose short-term rentals is because the people who are traveling short-term are taking a vacation. They're splurging. They're doing something where they expect VIP treatment and they want luxury. They want, you know, a hot tub and a ping pong table.
They want $25,000 worth of furniture
right,
and decorating.
They want it to be super. They want a theme, right? They want to feel like they're staying and being hosted and they want the decorations and everything. The people that I host are not traveling for fun. Typically, they're traveling because they have to for work or they're moving or they're traveling because they have to. And they're kind of on a budget. They're looking for something that where they feel safe, where they feel comfortable, where they can cook dinner and sit in the living room and where they don't have to walk through a hotel lobby every day when they can, you know, when they get home from work, where they can bring their pets, where they can bring their kids and not be living in one room. And so those are the people that we're hosting. And so the bar's a little bit lower in terms of decor and amenities. Like we don't have to have attractions. We're not trying to be a resort. Mm-hmm. We're trying to be your house temporarily. Mm-hmm. And that's an easier bar to hit. So that was because I am not a designer at all. And so, you know, but I can make it look safe and comfortable and something like you'd feel like calling home for a couple of months.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you're thinking that there will still be people who have to travel for work. There will still be people who get burned out or flooded out of their houses temporarily mm-hmm. and have to move. Okay.
Right. I mean, if there is a major economic crash where we see, you know, that businesses aren't sending their workers for travel, there is that risk. And the backup plan for me would be to pivot to a long-term rental.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's talk about how you got so many units so fast, because that's, you know, most people, when they're buying rentals, they save up for a down payment for sometimes years in a row, and then they find a house and they put a down payment down and then they have to start over. They mm-hmm. save up for another 20% down for a few years and then they buy their next rental, which is why it takes most people 20 years to get 20 units. That whole, I'm going to put a whole bunch of money down and qualify for loan after loan after loan is not the route you took.
Absolutely not. So, I did not do those things. So, That's where master leasing comes in, and that's what allowed me to scale so much, especially in my first year. And the way it started was I had done one, right? We had our first one, which actually was a house that we bought, and we had, you know, not done that with a bank loan. We had done that with other types of financing and not with our own money. We hadn't saved up. And at first we thought, we'll fix up this house and flip it. But then I said, well, what if we kept it? What if we tried this midterm rental thing that I heard about? I think it might be a good idea. So we got the furniture, put it in, listed it, and then we had a booking. And I was like, this is going great. We should do another one. And the way it started was I joined the RIA, and I was at RIA meetings, and I was talking with other investors and asking them what they were doing. And I met someone else who she owned a rental property and had just had someone move out. She had a vacancy, and she was saying, oh, now I've got to do the screening and do the painting and do the turnover, and I got to find another tenant, and it's not great timing for me. And I said, you know what you ought to do is put furniture in it and list it, because I just did that and we're making a lot more money. And she said, I don't have time to have an Airbnb account. I don't know how that works. I don't know how I'm going to get all that furniture. Like, I don't have time to do that. And I was like, well, how about if I do it? And that's how it started. As I offered, well, I'll lease it from you. I asked what the rent was. And I was like, oh, well, I think I could rent it for, you know, this much higher amount. And I have to do the work of putting the furniture in it, getting it marketed, finding the person, and handling whenever anything little goes wrong, right? They're going to call me. They're not going to call the landlord. So I'm a filter now between the property owner, who kind of makes sure that I only call when there's like something major, and I handle all the little stuff. And so that was how I started out, was by just doing that one master lease. And then it kind of snowballed from there, because my next master lease was someone else at the RIA who also had a vacancy. And I found out that property owners liked the idea of the types of people that I described to you, traveling professionals, families looking, you know, in between homes, living in their unit, and also that their property was going to be professionally cleaned several times a year is also quite appealing. You know, I'm always wanting to maintain a 5-star review. So at any time, like, I want to have it have a 5-star review. And that's something that most renters don't do.
Mm-hmm. 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 Man, so many questions. So you don't do the thing that other people do with master leases, where you insist that I'm not going to do this unless I also have an option to buy.
I haven't really done that yet. No, I've heard about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that's not important to you, because you're after the cash flow, not after the property itself.
Yeah. I mean, I think long term, maybe, as wealth building. And that's why I've started buying more. And master leasing has also helped me to have the confidence to buy more, because I knew I had more confidence by doing a master lease, which is lower risk and lower expense, that it gave me the confidence to take on, you know, buying a whole house, mm-hmm. and, you know, being confident that it would work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And all of your units, we should say this, all of your units are not houses. I'm thinking people are probably sitting there going, she owns 19 single family homes.
No, it's not at all. So I've got a lot of one bedroom apartments. I think I've got 6 or 7. I'd have to count, but a lot of one bedroom apartments. I've got a 2-bedroom apartment, and then I've got single family houses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of people don't think about, if I had a 4-family, I could midterm lease all 4 of those units, or I could long term rent 3 of them and midterm rent 1 of them. And yeah, you've been really open in the kinds of properties that you were willing to do, as long as, I guess, you saw that they were going to work financially.
Right. The number one is it has to work financially. The number two, it has to be within 30 minutes of my house.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
another rule for me.
Mm-hmm. Very good. You listen to Real Life Real Estate Investing, talking today to Melissa Yatsik, who is talking about her business of somehow getting control of a property she likes the looks of as a midterm rental, so that each one of them can create enough cash flow that, well, we'll ask her what her big long-term goal is here after this break. But also, this is your chance to ask questions. 877-772-9658 is the number to call, or you can send an email to vinaradio@gmail.com. Back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I can always tell when the mic's off, but I can't do. There's like no button here that I can push. That's got to be.
That would tase me.
Who does that? Yeah. And George, can you fix the weather report for next week? Can we have like 70s for next Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, please?
I will call John Gum and see what he can do. He has more pull than I do.
Oh, I thought you created it. I thought whenever you said happen tomorrow is going to happen tomorrow. So just say 70 degrees.
Actually, you're looking for next Wednesday?
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Oh, okay. The extended only goes right now through Wednesday, high of 60 on Wednesday, partly sunny.
That'll do.
Yeah, maybe it'll warm up.
I just hate it when the Floridians and Californians come to the summit and they're like, oh my God, is it always this cold here? Because most years, it's still 70, 75. Like last year, I was outside in my like tank top because it was like 80 degrees during the summit. But this year, it looks like it's going to be a little more fall weather. So those of you who never get to experience fall weather, come to Cincinnati. You can have some fall weather. We're going to go to the email box here, and we got some questions from Lisa. This one is from Denise, who, based on her phone number, I'm going to say is from Raleigh area in the Carolinas. She says, is there a sweet spot as far as the monthly rental rate that you charge? And I think the question is, do you find that like houses that would rent for more money as long-term rentals are better? I think maybe it's more a question about the area. Like if you have one that's $9,000 a month because it's in a spectacular area, is that going to rent just as well or not as well as?
Right. So I don't have a lot of experience at the $9,000 a month market. But what I will say in terms of like what I don't know if there's a sweet spot, but you do have to know your market. And so here, like when you're trying to price it, you don't look at the price of long-term rentals, right? That's not who you're competing with. Because if these people could stay in a long-term rental, they would. What you're more competing with is the hotels and the short-term options that are available to them online. So if you look at those, at what it would cost for these people to stay at a hotel for a month, that's how you determine if it's going to be successful in your area. Is there a big enough gap between what the going rate is for that versus what the regular long-term rental rate is? And then you can figure out if it makes sense in your area.
And I assume you're looking for the extended stay hotels that are really close to your property. Like you're not going to look all the way across town.
No, I've found that, you know, for us here, I've gone up to 10 minutes away. If I'm within 10 minutes.
Yeah, all the way across town is 10 minutes.
Yeah,
Dayton,
exactly. And there's not really a traffic problem. So again, I'm an expert for 2 years in Dayton and I can talk to you about that. But in general, if you have an extended stay hotel, and by that I mean the hotels that have the kitchen, the full fridge and this cooktop or stove, not the ones that just have a mini fridge and a microwave. If those hotels are built in your area, that is a very big green flag. It means that there's some company that has spent a ton of money doing feasibility studies and market research on if there's a demand for extended stay housing in the area, and they've decided to spend all the money to build the big hotel. And that kind of is a huge sign that it's probably going to be good for you in the area.
Well, here, this is sort of a related question from JC in Las Vegas. How does she go about assessing whether any given property is even a good candidate for midterm rental? Now, you've already said there's like a time limitation for you that you don't want to drive more than 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. But like, what about the neighborhood? What about, you know, does it matter if it's on a busy street? Should it be on a quiet street? What about the price range? Like what makes you go, ooh,
right,
that one?
So price is definitely important. Like the cash flow is super important to me. So it has to be priced where I feel comfortable that I'm going to make the cash flow. The second thing is I started off doing only one bedroom apartments because the rent is the cheapest out of anything. And it's the lowest risk for me. Like if I sign the lease and it doesn't go well, I'm out whatever that monthly rent is. And it's a lot smaller of a number on a one bedroom apartment than it is on a 4-2.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So do you primarily stay in like, because you can't really compare like Dayton and Atlanta in terms of like the price range of the property,
right?
But like C neighborhoods, B neighborhoods, A neighborhoods.
Right. So like the people who are traveling, if you imagine that you got a work assignment in a new city and you've never been to that city and you're going to Google, where is the safe area to stay in this city? That's what these people are doing. So if your area comes up in the middle of a big red zone on a crime map, it's probably not ideal because the travelers who are going to be coming in are going to see that and it's going to turn them off. And so it's probably very similar to what you'd look at for short-term stays. Like people need to feel safe and comfortable when they park their car there and when they come home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have three questions in a row that are effectively the same question here.
I can't wait.
How do you market your available units?
So just on the online platforms that already exist on your Airbnb and Furnished Finder, that there's no magic trick. That's how I do it. I do have a website, my own website that I list my properties on. I'm starting to get some business there from direct bookings and referrals and networking. But I started out with all the companies that are spending all the ad money anyway.
Now, some questions from Sue. Do you do a background and credit check on your occupants?
Sometimes. So if somebody books through Airbnb, then no, I don't. They book through Airbnb. Airbnb has a little bit of protection for you there. And so I don't. If they book directly with me, then I do. Sometimes if they're booking through an employer and the employer is paying the rent and will sign an agreement that they are going to pay, then I don't really care what the person's, what the employee's, you know, income or credit score is, because I know the rent's going to be paid by their employer. So it does depend. And so sometimes yes and sometimes no.
Do you charge a deposit or a cleaning fee?
I definitely charge a cleaning fee every time. I collect that up front when they move in. As far as the deposit, again, I do it sometimes. So same reason, because Airbnb doesn't really allow you to do that anymore. So I can't. But if they book directly, I can. And what I've been doing is, if you meet certain criteria, I will waive the deposit.
Okay. Okay. And last question from Sue. We're still talking to Sue here.
Oh.
Do you, and this would be about, you know, a single family home that maybe had three bedrooms. Do you ever do shared housing, or is it one person or family per unit?
I do not do shared housing. For me, that's a whole next level thing. That's a different business. I think it's a great business, but it's not what I do. And again, I'm really focused on what I do. The shared housing is a little bit more management. You have to manage the common spaces. Who's going to clean the shared bathroom? Who's going to take care of the shared living room? What happens if two people don't get along? And that's things that I just don't want to worry about managing. So I'm not in that business. But if you want to be, there are people who are, but it's not me.
So it never happens that, so I'm a partner on a property in another city, and it was available for rent, but then a company called and said they had three of their workers. So three guys. That wanted to move in, and of course they were paying for it, so we let that happen. So that
I've had that happen too, for sure. But I just have one lease. I don't have separate agreements with everybody, and I have, you know,
they don't get to come and go on different months.
No, their lease starts and ends on the same day. Then it's one. It's like a package deal. If they want to share and work that out between them, that's fine with me.
Okay. Okay. And then Pat says, how much did she spend to furnish the one and two bedroom units?
I have found it's far less than you think. We're very thrifty at the Yatsik household. and so, yeah, it's not very much. I would say for a one bedroom apartment right now, we're typically able to do it for $2,000 or less. And for a three bedroom home, it's about $3,000 or less.
Okay. Denise emailed me back to remind me that she is from Lake Norman, and I knew that because she has an Airbnb in Lake Norman that I want to stay at.
Oh.
I've talked to Denise before. Okay, so let's go back to just kind of your big picture here. How the kids, like, I mean, your job is a work at home job, right?
Yes, I work from home for my job.
So they are watching you work and then also do this. Are they involved at all? Are they happy about it? Or are they like, I don't care.
I mean, so my kids are all in the teenagery age, right? The youngest is 11 and the oldest is 19. And so, yeah, they do see what I do. It kills me when they say you were working all the time, right? But I really am not and I try to be present as much as I can, but there are days I do have to work. So lately I've done like a split day schedule for my job. I'm now working Mondays and Fridays. So I work those days. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday are my days that I spend homeschooling with the kids. And then I try to do the rental thing and all the in-between time. on the evenings and the weekends and the little minutes here and there during the day.
Mm-hmm. So what does your typical day look like? You got the job, you got the homeschool.
There's not really a typical day, right, when you have rental properties. In the last week, I had a leaking roof and I had to replace a water heater and do the job and do the homeschooling and the kids' events, the extracurriculars. There's so much driving. Mm-hmm. But that's where my husband is super helpful. I could not do without him. And he's definitely a partner with me in all of this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The kids are going to like it when you reach the end goal here, and then all of a sudden it's, no, we're not going to Kings Island. We're going to Disney World.
Yes. I mean, they do help somewhat. My son mows the lawns on a lot of our rentals, and my kids have helped with cleaning or furnishing at various points, not in a full-time employed kind of a way, but, you know, they're there and they see it. I don't force it on them. I don't make them help me. I think that would be counterproductive. If you tell a teenager they have to do something, they automatically kind of don't want to do it, even if they did want to do it to begin with. So you have to be careful with that. But they do see what I'm doing, and, you know, I think it's good for them. We talk a lot about finances and how to get this sort of wealth building and financial freedom and how to make it so that you're not dependent on a boss to pay you a salary until you're can retire in your 60s.
Did you talk any of them into coming to the Youth Academy at the summit?
Not so far. I had one who really wanted to, but she's got a marching band competition on Saturday, so she can't this year. I have had one come in the past, awesome. But she didn't feel like she needed a repeat.
She's got it.
Yeah.
Been there once. She's got it.
Yes.
All right. We're going to take one last break. If you have any final questions, send it via email. We may not be able to get you on the phone. So, just send it to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back. We're in the home stretch talking to Melissa Yatsik, although it's not your home stretch if you're coming to the summit, because she has a whole hour and a half to lay out this whole thing end to end, and she'll be there all weekend because you're going to want to walk up to her and say, hey, I just had a quick question for you. Question from Catherine. She says, is there ever a problem with HOAs who will not let you rent out a property?
So the answer is no, because I don't have properties in HOAs. So I don't have that problem.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's always kind of the answer is, if you're afraid that somebody's going to take control of your strategy, you just don't go there.
Yes.
I will say that it's unusual for even areas that have banned short-term rentals to have banned rentals over 30 days. Almost all of those laws say...
That's correct. And that's one of the reasons I also felt comfortable choosing this as a strategy, because most of the legislation against short-term rentals is phrased as 30 days or less. And so if all of my leases are 30 days or more, none of that applies to me.
Mm-hmm. I may slaughter this name, but I'm going to guess it's Shrikanth. Would like to know. He says, I'm in Michigan. I guess I just assumed that was a guy. I don't know. I'm sorry, Shrikanth, if I've misgendered you as well. I'm in Michigan. What is the best area to get started in? I think he's looking for you to say, like, Florida or Ohio.
Like all of Michigan?
Yeah, like, what's wrong with Michigan?
Yeah. I mean, I'm from Wisconsin, so I would say that you would look for those extended stay hotels. And if those exist, especially if there's multiple of them that exist in the area, that's a great sign. And then you also need to have, number one, the hotels exist, so there's the demand. And number two, the price of housing, that there's a gap between what people are paying at hotels and what the price of housing is, because that's where your profit is going to be. It's in the gap.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Shri also wants to know, how much capital would I need to get started with a one-bed, one-bath?
So with a one-bed, one-bath, if you were master leasing, you probably would need first month's rent and security deposit and the furnishing. And so for me, that's easily under $5,000. So that's another reason why I picked this, is because it's a strategy that you can get into without having very much money.
Mm-hmm.
And that amount of money too, those kinds of things you can put on a business credit card or a business line of credit while you're getting started. So you don't even really need the money.
Michael wants to know how many hours a week you spend managing your 19 units.
Well, there's a difference between managing and acquiring. So like the acquisitions, you know, putting together 19 so far, that's been a lot of work. And then, you know, managing them is a separate thing that's ongoing. So I actually haven't tallied that up, although I could. I am sort of a, I'm a person who likes to track things. So I track a lot of things. But it's definitely, I would say at least I spend probably 20, 30 hours a week on average. In the last 2 years.
Management and acquisition? Or
on both. On both. Yeah. Okay. On all things rentals.
Yeah. But if you just stopped right now, like you were like, I said I was going to get 20, but 19
yes.
is the end. How many hours would you guess you're spending managing the 19?
I'd say it's probably about half that.
So 10 hours.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you do. I mean, I know your husband is involved too, but you guys pretty much do it all, right?
Right.
Okay. He also would like to know what your average stay turns out to be.
Well, we do hire cleaners. I will say that. I did start out cleaning our own, but we have graduated to hiring cleaners, which is
awesome.
Which is nice. Yeah.
And what is the average stay?
I think it's a few months, 3 to 6.
Okay. What are your biggest challenges?
Biggest challenges. I've had to say no a lot. To deals because I have a capacity now. Like there's 35 minutes away or 40 minutes away, right? And it's been hard, but I have said no to those. Or bigger houses, right? A master lease on a 5-bedroom house. And I'm like, ugh, that seems like a big risk for me. And that's a lot of furniture to buy. That's a higher price point. So I said no to those. So like, I think it's been hard to just say no and stay focused. And so that I can reach my ultimate goal, which is having more time for my family and being able to have the cash flow from this allow me to fully quit my job. You know, like I said, I'm down to 2 days a week. I was full-time 5 days a week 2 years ago when I started.
Well, let's talk about what is in Melissa's future. What is your day look like when you have reached where you want to be here and where is that? Like how many properties do you have to own? Are you going to take them all?
No, I my goal is 20, right? And so I'm at 19. I'm very close. I don't think I need many more than this. I'm trying to build something that's enough just for my family to live and kind of average upper middle class life on it. And so that I wasn't dependent on somebody else's business to pay the salary that we needed to live off of.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of my goal is to have that coming in from these and to get my work hours. I think, you know, once I have them all, I'll be able to get it down to well under 10 hours a week. Looking in now to some different softwares and things I can use to save time. And then I want to do what I did from the beginning. I want to be there for my kids every day, all day long. I want to be present with them. I want to travel more. We love to travel. We could do another podcast on travel with kids because I've got a lot to say on that. but yeah, we like to do a lot of trips that are extended, 3, 4, 5, 6 week trips. And you know, you just can't do that with a normal job.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, very true. Well, Melissa, appreciate you coming today. Looking forward to seeing your actual whole Vina Isn't Interrupting Me presentation at the summit coming up next weekend. Again, listeners, you can get a virtual seat to that and also donate to public radio at wmkvfm.org. Also, don't forget Summit Help Night tonight. It's no lecture, just people helping each other. You can get your seat to that at cincinnatirea.com. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.